Okay, I am recording. And now we can talk. So I'm making a point of starting with the same question I started with last time we did an interview. How are you?
I'm good.
You're good. Okay. Last time, the first thing you said was, I'm alive. So, good sounds better, right?
Yeah. It's better now. Yeah.
So, after we last talked, what happened to you?
After last time we talked, I was in process of being deported. I was in a situation where the jail that I was at was uncomfortable. They pretty much was very bad guys. They was racist. I'm gonna just put it like that. They mm-hmm. didn't like immigrants, and they was treating people unfairly, and sometimes beating the people, you know, putting hands on them, because I witnessed two guys, one from Guatemala and one from Africa, getting beat up mm-hmm. by the CEOs. And after that, I was deported. And they sent me from that jail to somewhere called, in Cleveland called, I forgot the jail name. Oh my God, Cuyahoga County, something like that, I forgot. Mm-hmm. And then from there I went to Louisiana, and from Louisiana they sent me back to Mauritania. When I got back to Mauritania, I was arrested at the airport. I spent the night, put me on the cell, and it was just horrible the whole night. It was it's just, I don't know. I had to bribe money in order to be released. And from there, I was trying to get papers, which is identity card. It was very difficult. I went through a hell. I used to cry every day.
Yeah.
I fought for my life for so long, almost a year and a half, trying to find a way. I don't even know, because I'm scared to even go outside the house, because going out there without no proper identity documents means jail automatically. So I went through that. I just stayed in the house. I stayed with some people that I know. They let me be with them. It was okay at the beginning. So then at the end, it's just everything was, it was horrible. It was horrible. They used to cry every night. I decided just to go to Senegal and apply for refugee. So I left Mauritania, went to Senegal, and went to a process, because we went to HSAR, High Commission of Refugees in Senegal, to apply for asylum. I wanted to explain that my country kicked me out. They mm-hmm. didn't want to give me no birth certificate. They say that I was not from around. While I was on that process, someone that will know my family in Mauritania contacted me over the phone, and he told me to come back home in Mauritania if I can, because it's a likelihood that witnesses, people who know my grandpa, and because my grandpa had a family members that were fought in the independence in 1960 in Mauritania. Because of that, and they're the reason why Mauritania got freed from colonization.
From France? From France?
I didn't hear you.
Free from France?
Oh, my grandpa? From Mauritania.
No, sorry, the colonization, France is
France.
The country. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. So, because my grandpa and them fought for that, for this country to get mm-hmm. the independence, and I have witnesses. One person, old person, was alive, and they put a documentation like, if I'm not Mauritanian, who can be? Because I'm up my my grandparents in my village, they're my heroes, they're the one who fought, and they died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they died for the cause of freedom, how they can do that. And then it was one of the representative of my region, which is like, she represented in the parliament, which we call of the senators, and she finally decided to help. So my case was, it was a particular case. Out of everybody that has been deported from Mauritania, I was the only person who ended up getting the birth certificate out of all. Because the rest that I met, they left. Some of them are, I don't know, some of them went to Senegal. I don't know what happened to them because we lost contact. Mm-hmm. Some of them didn't have, they lost everything. They didn't have no cell phone, so we lost contact. To today, I think about them every day, and I don't know. I wish I can track them down. And some of them, I heard they went to Ghana, Nigeria, looking for a life. But me, after that, I was just looking around, and finally, at the last minute, not even 2 months ago, I finally was hired by BP, British Petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working with them right now. Thank you, God. My life just started to change.
So just that's now. Where you're working on the Ivory Coast right now?
Right now, we're on the, I'm in offshore between Mauritania and Senegal because they found oil and gas. So I was deployed on this area, and the likelihood is I'm going to stay for the next 2 years. It's like 40 miles east, deeper water inside on the ocean, but it's owned by two countries, Mauritania and Senegal. So BP decided to send me over here because they believe that my English is okay enough to communicate with people around here and help them translate things. So yeah, I've been deployed around here.
So your job, is your main job as a translator?
My main job right now, it was not a translator. We do security for the hub. So I'm a supervisor on security, control risk, because we watch the fishermen who be trying to approach our facilities, like they have to stay like 500 meters from us, and also just be lookout, you know, for the safety of the herb and the surrounding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got a team of 8 people.
How did BP end up hiring you? How did you end up applying to the job, or how did they find you?
Man, it was just... Okay, so it was just God, pretty much. I cried too much, and I always late night, sit on my knee and just ask God, because I don't know who's going to help me. Like, I left my country 21 years ago. I came back, everybody dead. Like, I don't know nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the point where people start to feel like, hey, man, you've been around for too long. You're always in the room. Like I'm scared to come outside. Like, I don't know. It was different. It's Africa. So every day what I do is I have this phone, and I go to this website, and then just go through and try and see who's hiring, what opportunity is, how I'm gonna get a job. And then one day, somebody sent me this link that, hey, these guys are looking for people. They just find a lot of gas and oil in your land. And maybe you might wanna try this. So I went out and just, you know, I went out and put my resume. Because all my time in the U.S., all I did is work out. So I did a lot of security job. I got my certificate that I had working in the U.S. I did work for Delta Airlines as a security. I did work for Mobile. I worked for big companies in the United States because of that. So they was interested on me, and they called me for a job interview. And then, man, I don't even know. They end up liking me. And the guy that interviewed me pretty much just have a little heart. He said that they would call me again. And boom. And then I end up being like, here I am. You know?
I'm so glad that happened for you, honestly, man. So you're 30 days onshore, 30 days offshore. That's your work schedule, I think you said.
That's right.
Where do you live when you're not on duty?
Well, right now, because last time, just before I got this job, I asked people in the United States to help me so I can do business between Mauritania and Senegal. So I used to go to Mauritania and bring some goods and then sell it back. And, people raised money for me. It was $600. So I was trying to do something to survive just before I got this job. That was 3 months ago. So at the time, I went back to the borders in Mauritania, and I was also the government of Mauritania took everything that I worked hard for, everything, my whole bag. And they saying that I'm supposed to now sell it because the douane, what they call douane, people who do a check closing and stuff, they saying that it was a young guy, two young boys, they saying that I'm not going to get the bag until I pay them worth for $200, which I didn't have. All I
What?
have to do back in Kimber, never get the money.
Yeah.
So it was just horrible. I
Yeah.
cried. So I decided to get out. I just gave up on my country. I didn't want to go back over there no more because they broke my heart twice. So I moved to Senegal. When I'm offshore, I live in Dakar because this is the place that for now that I find peace. These people are cool. Everybody look like me. And, some of them give me a smile
That's
and
nice,
make me
yeah.
feel like it's okay to be alive.
Yeah. Wait, so how long were you in Mauritania after you got off the plane from Louisiana?
Oh my gosh, probably a nice 11 months or a year, the whole time that I was deported until the last
You're
6 months
kidding.
is when I started moving.
I thought that after I remember that you were in the airport for a little while, and then you got out, and I remember when you got a phone. So how long did that take? How long did it take to get bribe your way out of the airport, find a phone, find a family member?
Oh my gosh, like the whole process, what happened that day is when I spent the night in jail, they pretty much, I got off from the airplane and I spent the night in a nasty, dirty room with a lot of mosquitoes.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Didn't
man.
want to leave. And
Yeah.
just, it was just horrible. And
Yeah.
then the next day, all day, so we arrived in Mauritania around midnight. So I spent the whole night in the whole the entire room where there's nothing in there but mosquitoes and it's dirty, filthy. So I cannot even sit, I was standing still. And then the next day, around 1 p.m., is when they opened the door and they took me to what they call a CDT. It's where people do background checks about an individual. Because my document that I had from the Mauritanian embassy, they're saying that that's not valid. Mauritanian is giving it to whoever they want,
Sorry,
not illegal, not just.
what was the word again? What did you call it?
Travel document.
Travel doc. Oh, okay. Before that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this that the travel document was not valid because
Right.
Mauritanian government gave it to anybody. So that would not justify that I'm from Mauritania and they're not gonna let me go. They want me to tell them where I was from. I've been telling them I'm from Mauritania, that they don't want to believe me. So they took me to CDT, which is immigration in Mauritania, where they put all the migrants, people who's not from around, and they hold me there. But before that, I had a chance to make a phone call. My family members came to the airport and they negotiated. So my uncle's best friend, he worked in the Mauritanian government, and he the one who said he will take my responsibility. I will be back over here instead of keeping me in there. And he said that I'm from here, I just been going abroad for too long. That's why I don't have no Mauritanian identity. And he will take the responsibility that I will be back Monday, the following Monday. So he took the responsibility. Pretty much, he bailed me out. That's what we call it in America.
Yeah.
So he bailed me out. So he told me that I have to coordinate with them, make sure that I will be back at any time they want me to. I was going through that process. I was going back. Sometime I come on Wednesdays, sit there for 3 hours. They call my name and ask me to questions about my village. Everything that they asked me, I already knew because this is where I'm from. I'm from Mauritania.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not enough. They always keep on telling me to come back. And then the last time they gave me a rendezvous for 30 days, I got tired of them and I just say, you know what, I'm not going back. You gotta catch me when you can. I stopped going. And after that, it's just, yeah, United States deported me, and I believe that they made a mistake because I struggled and I suffered, and they was like the judge in the court. He looked at me right in the eye and said that Mauritania don't have no problems, but he failed. He do have problems. And he told me that I will be safe. Nothing. The government stay there and say that they know that nothing gonna happen. I'm gonna be okay. Everything that the three brought into a court, they try and find a way to, you know, over change it and make the court believe that they on the right side. But they was wrong also, because everything demonstrate that everything that they said 2 years ago and anything that I told the court 2 years ago, right now, evidence demonstrate that everything is true because it's right there again. But I don't know when they're going to go ahead and look up the picture and just do the right thing and understand that black Mauritanian will not have no peace in Mauritania. The one who's there don't have no peace. The one that they will deport back over here will not have no peace. They should just accept them as refugees and let them find a new life. It's the best thing they need to do instead of putting people in or keep them in jail over there instead of sending them over here, because over here is like, it's just pretty much dying. They will never get no papers. The one that I know now, I don't know where they are. I don't even know. They don't even have no phones. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
They will never have no job. They don't have no phones. You cannot contact them, so they're going to be just homeless on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Only God knows.
What is daily life like for a black Mauritanian in the country?
Oh, what is like? Oh, man.
Because you said Senegal people look like you, but Mauritania is your country, so it's kind of crazy to have to feel out of place in the place you grew up.
Yeah, the people who run the country are lighter, they Arabs, they like, they got that lighter color skin looking. They don't want to control the government. They speak Arabic. Everything is in Arabic. People speak Arabic. I came back to the country. I don't even know. I become an analphabet. I don't know how to read no more because everything is in Arabic. The words at the airport, books, TV, everything. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm definitely, they probably made me feel like I was an immigrant. Everything has changed. And if you light-skinned Arabic, nobody never will ask you your identity because you are from Mauritania, because you're Arabic. If you're black, you better have your identity card in your pocket. What y'all call an ID, have it in your pocket. And if you don't, you go on the jail.
You're
not coming out.
Would you just get stopped walking down the street and asked to show your identity card?
I spent the night in jail. While I was here, I just wanted to go to the store to buy something to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And the police arrested me. They put me in jail. I had to give them some money, the money that the people gave me, so I can survive without to share with them in order to get out that night. And then a couple months later, same story. I moved from that neighborhood looking for somewhere quiet, somewhere peace. Also got arrested that night. They didn't want to let me go. I spent the whole night in jail. The next day, I spent the whole day to like 5 o'clock. And then finally, somebody was like, he's going to let me go. If I don't have my ID next time, they're going to deport me to a neighboring country, Mali or Senegal. So, yeah.
How does it compare to living in Mauritania when you were a kid or when you were a younger adult?
You know, it never really made no difference because as a boy, when I was born, by the time I turned 11, there was a genocide in 1989 that happened to my country. And all I know is the same people that I'm telling the 8 hours, they was out there killing black people. So that one alone, it put a lot of trauma into my life. That was the first time ever witnessing somebody getting beat up till they died. You know, that's at a young age, I saw people dead on the street.
Yeah.
So after that, all what we know is the people that was in the government, which is Fulani, the same tribe that I am, was getting arrested and put in jail and getting killed. Most of them ran into Europe. Most of them went to the United States. They become refugees, half of my people. So they left the country with those guys that I'm talking about right now. The majority of black Mauritanian ran. So all I know is we're not allowed to stay out until 9 o'clock. Young boy, I get arrested every day just because I'm black. At the age of 15, you know, we got to go home early when it says 6, 7 o'clock. But go in the house because the police will arrest you even day two. They will make you dance sometime all night, sometime beat you up, make you do some dances, some style, some do whatever they want you to, like 6 in the morning because you're underage. They let you go home. You know, so I never really seen a freedom in my own land. That's why I ran. I come to America. I was looking for a better life. And they put me right back to where I was running from, sent me back to Africa, to Mauritania again.
How old were you when you decided that you wanted to leave Mauritania for the first time?
20.
Okay, so I'm 21 now. That's kind of funny. So you told, I think you told me last time we talked that you were a political activist. I guess it's hard not to be to some extent if you're being threatened all the time. But when you were younger, you were politically active in Mauritania, right?
Absolutely, yes. Oh, yeah. Being a Mauritanian as a Fulani, it becomes natural thing to be active. We always wanted to find a way to get someone to get us out of this. And I'm still today active with. Yeah. I will be to the day I die or to our witness freedom. Because if I tell you that I don't love my country, that's not true. I just don't love the regime, the system of my country, the one who won the power. And we try to do it peacefully, it will never work. We've been arrested, put in jail, got, you know, like, that's what I've been doing all my life. That's what my parents, that's what we know since 1989 to today. Every Fulani in Mauritania is an activist, because at least something wrong with you, because what's going on here is not fair. And if someone come and said they're willing to help and they're willing to change it, we all be behind them and we will help. Yeah, I've been an activist all my life pretty much, yeah.
Did that ever make you even more of a target when you were a teenager or when you were about 20?
Oh, yeah. Before, that's the reason why I ran from the United States, because we become a target. They was arresting people one by one, whoever was. Even now, even today, like as we speak, people are getting arrested again. And they get put in jail. Police is there killing them. You know, that's just, yeah. Every Mauritanian that I know of, it's like deja vu all over again. The same thing that we did, same thing that I've been through. I'm looking at right now, young boys on, you know, in Mauritania, I have a lot of pictures and videos that what they're doing to them. And I've seen a lot of them right now in the journey to United States, some of them in the journey to Spain. The ones who don't have no possibility, they just trying to cross the border, even going to Senegal, they try to get out of there because there's nothing there for them, you know.
Yeah.
Activists are getting arrested. Whoever's doing loud is getting beat up. Police will torture, you know.
Yeah. Would you advise a 20-year-old Mauritanian today to flee to the United States, or would you tell them to go to France or a different country?
Right now, because I'm sorry to tell you this, to be honest with you, maybe I had a bad luck. I was under whole different circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But the same thing that I witnessed into the United States and the immigration facilities, it's pretty much like, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't want nobody to be victim of that. I hope it changed, I don't know. But while I was there, if someone right now asks me to take a journey into the United States, with those judges that I saw, the one that was not trying to judge based on fact. We just want to judge based because they want to do something and because they don't like the person or they don't like the group of person and decide to make their own judgment. I would tell someone to go somewhere else, to go to Canada, where people still got freedom and they will give you chances to leave instead of go to the United States. Because what I'm looking at is they have politicized refugees. They put them on the central of the problem. So now they're teaching the children to even look at these guys differently. They're on the news talking about the belly. So I don't think it's safe. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. But me personally, because I've seen someone who's supposed to protect, like a deportation officer, who told people to get the hell out of my country, things like that. Mm-hmm. Someone who worked for the United States government, willing to do things like that. So me, when you ask me, I would tell them. If they ask me honestly, I would tell them, I don't know. But, you know, if I tell them based on what I experience, they just, I just wish them good luck. If the United States government grant them asylum, it's a beautiful country to live in. But if they not, good luck. Because ICE can pick them up and put them again in jails like they did before. And they will be there for years. It's like someone who committed a crime. You stay there for 2-3 years. That's a long time.
Have you and Lynn been trying to reverse your deportation? Because I know that's something that she's worked on with other people. Have you been trying to get back?
I don't know. To be honest with you, at the beginning, I thought about it, but like going through it and then going back, rewinding the tape, the things that I've been through. I always loved to make my children's day. My wife, my kids are born there. And then just the 3 years that I've been in ICE custody, they traumatized me and they made me scared even to go back to the United States. Because anytime I think about those nights while I'm in the room hungry, I'm in the cell, sometimes it's just something called lockdown. They shut down the doors on you for 3 days. And it'd be a moment where you had no hot shower, that place that in Butler County that they shut down. People that who tell you automatically, like, hey, man, we don't fucking like, I'm sorry, we don't like you, man. You know, you should not be here. Why are you still here?
Yeah,
you don't want
to
go home. Why you don't go home? Gosh, you like it over, like they talk to you like, I don't like that. That traumatized me. It makes me not want to, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of different. The love is kind of, it's fading a little bit. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I still want to come back. I don't know. I mean, I want freedom and, everything, but...
Call Dr. CCR. Mark Stevens. Call Dr. CCR.
But I don't know. It's different.
Yeah. I know I'm an American that you're talking to right now, but I don't blame you at all. Don't worry. But like you said, your wife and your daughter, did you say kids plural? I knew you had a daughter. How many are there?
I had one daughter, and I had a boy that I never really, never say nothing about that. After I came back over here, it's when I built a relationship with my son. Not a lot of people know about him, but only I was not a man enough to say this is a whole different topic. I really don't want to really touch that.
Okay.
But yeah, I do have a son out there.
In America?
I didn't know if it was mine at the beginning. Yeah, at the beginning I didn't know it was mine because how we met and how we have the child was just complicated. So. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, and she got mad at me and moved somewhere else and never said nothing. By the time I go by pictures, you look the dad on me, I know, I can tell, that's me all the way, and I started building the relationship.
But I know your wife and your daughter got to go see you, right? A little while ago?
Yes, they did.
How did that happen? That was amazing.
Yeah, they felt my pain.
Yeah.
And they wanted to heal me, you know. And they wanted to heal me. They come to visit me. They stayed with me for 3 weeks. It was beautiful because we visited, you know, neighboring country. We visited that part. It was nice. And they went back and left me again.
Yeah. Are you in contact with them a lot now?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes, I am. I am in contact with my daughter. I am, yeah.
They're in Columbus, right?
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati?
Yeah, they live like what's a place called Florence, Kentucky, which is like 15 miles.
Oh,
it's just north in Kentucky. It's not far from downtown.
Yeah. How old is your daughter? Is she in high school?
She's just 18.
18? What is she up to? Is she applying to colleges? What does she does she do sports? What does she do?
She's in high school. She can graduate this year.
Where is she going to go next year? Does she know?
She told me like she go on to Texas, and sometimes she be saying like she might go to Cleveland for school. I don't know. She be I don't know what she went to.
Yeah. That's exciting. Wow.
It is.
Well, would be crazy if she went to Kenyon. I would have been excited about that, but I'm sure she'll do great wherever.
Yeah. I hope she does. She is very intelligent and very, very nice. I'm really different. You know, I'm just proud of her.
Yeah.
She got gold. Like she wanted to do positive in life. She loved her family. She loved her other side, the African side. I kind of like her.
That's great nice. For her, yeah.
You know, my mom, them, my brothers. And you know, I got just two brothers who ran from the trouble in Mauritania.
I remember, yeah.
They was getting beat up 10 days ago, and now they thank you God they went to the United States and immigration released them. My two young brothers, they are there now. So yeah.
Wait, your brothers are in the US? I thought they were in Europe.
Yeah, I got two young ones that was in Mauritania. Now they're in the US. They just got there like last week.
What? Oh my God, how did that happen?
They crossed the border. They went to. It was an enlisted.
Oh, did they cross the southern border?
How did you?
Did they cross the southern border, or did they fly?
Yes.
To... Oh my goodness, no, that's intense.
Salvador. I don't know where they go. Chapachula, Mexico. They crossed. They went to Arizona, and ICE got them at the border, and finally they got released into the United States.
They got asylum?
Not yet, but those are the refugees. They deserve an asylum. I told Len about them, and they just never met Len yet, and I hope that one day they meet. I got other brothers who live there in the U.S., so they over there. They okay right now because they're living with family members. But yeah, Mauritanians deserve asylum. Single black Mauritanian, that's just everything. Demonstrate that they deserve an asylum. And the United States need to execute what they swear to, that they will protect and they will follow what they signed for, that the refugees deserve an asylum. They should not send no Mauritania to Mauritania. And those ones that they send to Mauritania, they owe them apology. They do, because they should never done that. That was a mistake, a bad mistake. I'm a victim of that. I'm a victim of that, and I wish I can write a letter to a president of the United States or somebody that who cares and let them know, look, I don't want to come back to your place no more, but I want you to know that stop making this place mistakes again, because I was one of them. And thank you, God. I don't know what happened. He got me out of the hole, and he put me on the better places now. But it's 95% of those guys who've been sent back to Mauritania. I can guarantee you, they live in a hell. If they not run from there, they will end up somewhere in jail or getting killed.
Yeah.
That's something for sure.
Were you disappointed? Because, I mean, the U.S., we got a new president since our last interview as well. Did you have high expectations for things getting better after President Biden took office, or did you kind of expect things to stay the same for refugees?
Oh, I thought because it happened when I was in ICE custody.
Right.
I thought like it's going to be changes. I was happy because I always thought that they would do something positive for those guys, because I know they know, because everything that they were saying was true. That's how I know they know. So they know what's going on. But as soon as he got into a power, he failed us again.
Yeah.
Knowing that he know what they're supposed to be doing. They know how to talk to people. I made my wife and my brothers voted for him. Mm-hmm. I made some people out there to go out there. I motivated people from my land who end up being a United States citizen to please vote for him. People who don't even care about politics, I made them. Because I thought I abetted that everything that he's saying that he was going to do. But he failed me. And he failed a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because he didn't do anything. They didn't have no immigration reform, but who knows if he's going to win again. They have both chambers. They ask people to give him both chambers. They will do the positive thing. They will do this. They will talk about it. They make people believe in them. And time is gone. There's nothing going to happen. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I hope, but I don't know. But as of now, I don't see nothing that is. I mean, I don't know. I didn't see nothing. They didn't do nothing because they still, until today, believe people.
So, I think we both know how you'd like things to change for refugees entering the U.S., just that you said no Mauritanian should ever be sent back, that everyone should be given asylum, should be safe, who has a case like yours or your brother's. How would you like to see the U.S. and other countries, democratic countries around the world, change our relationship to Mauritania? Because just in terms of press coverage, in terms of what we hear from our government, we don't really hear about Mauritania. We hear about it very, very little.
Yeah. I mean, I hope they pay attention and just judge by the evidence. See, now everything's back in the day, people can lie and say, no, we don't torture anymore. Or no, everybody is the same, because the good politicians know how to make things look good. And now I don't know what type of deal they had and what they do, but the problem is when it comes to Mauritanian case, the world need to pay attention. And I think they need to do something to make the government, at least try to make the government change their ways towards black Mauritanians by any means necessary. Because it's necessary. If they don't want to see no migrants floating, dying on the oceans, or crossing the border and dying on there, because common sense tells us that someone who's happy would never do that.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it would not be someone in the United States, somewhere who could work, who would leave his job and cross the Mexican border, trying to hide in Mexico. They would not do it because they're okay. So anytime you see someone doing things, some risky things, and tell me that they feel their life, you should look the evidence and if he deserves what he's saying is true. Don't just not give it to him because you don't want to. Do it because evidence supports everything. Mauritanian people deserve asylum. The whole world knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Black Mauritanians deserve it because all the evidence supports everything that they say. So what are they? Even American country reports support what we say. They know about it. Nobody can tell them nothing that they know more about, because they know every time I read the country report, they're telling the truth. They're not lying. Why they don't follow their own law?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I understand that right now people are migrating, and some people are thinking that, okay, they're trying to, more of them are coming in, they're going to change the country, or they're going to take their jobs. Yeah, you can look it on that circumstance. You can look it on that angle and judge by that angle. But also don't forget about lives. People sometimes can get killed going back to their lands.
Mm-hmm.
What you going to do with them? Now does civilization give us that? So now people with a good heart should judge by that. What you will do for someone that will be killed when they go back to their country? You're going to let them go back and get killed? Or you going to save them? It's a tough decision. And when you talk about jobs and economy, see, they politicize poor people and refugees and put them on the umbrella because they're talking about, okay, more people we would never have jobs. We didn't, they would take everything. But also, you look at the whole context. This guy's life is in danger. What are you going to do with them? I don't know what they're going to do, but the West, British countries need to find a plan. The only thing they can do is by probably sanctioning, probably making new laws to these hostile nations like mine, and maybe things might change. But until then, people are going to run for death. Nobody want to die.
Yeah, no one wants to die.
Yeah.
Are people, is there a strong movement to change Mauritania from within right now that you're aware of? What are people doing?
People are fleeing.
People are every...
People are fleeing. They're on your way. They're coming. They're all over the place. Some of them are going to Europe. Some of them are trying to go to the United States. They fleeing because whoever trying to be an activist, I was an activist. I remember what happened to me a long time ago.
Yeah.
Deja vu all over. See, recently, you know, what happened to the activists? Some of them are still in jail. And when they come home, they will never be the same.
Yeah.
They get tortured, they will not eat. They will put them in the rooms where it's so full of mosquitoes and anything that bite you every night. No lights, no bed. You sleep in the concrete, it's hot. No fan, no climatization, nothing, no window. You know, that's what they don't get. And nobody cares. Nobody. Sometimes the sad part about it is when you tell someone what happened to you, they look at you wide and I am telling you, you're not telling the truth. That's the worst part, but that hurts.
Yeah.
You know?
Why do you think people don't believe you?
I don't know. That's a very good question. Because I don't know. Sometimes I think I'd be like, okay, maybe some people probably did not tell the truth, but maybe because of somebody else's fault, now we all got to pay for the price. Sometimes I think, oh, they know better. They know for sure, but they just don't want to do the right thing. I don't know. I'm confused. Sometimes I think they know because they know, but they choose not to do the right thing. Someone can tell you something and he's telling you like, hey, man, don't send me over here because this guy is crazy. He's going to kill me. Knowing that the guy that he's saying, you know, he's a killer. And this person, you already know, it doesn't matter if this person is telling you this. You don't believe in the guy, but you know the guy is a killer. He killed before people like this guy, and he's doing it at this time. And this guy is saying, I don't want to go there because if I go, he's going to kill me, and you choose not to believe him. I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of different. It's tough. I don't know.
How did... As a young political activist, how did you come together with other people? What were you part of an organized movement? Were you working with other students?
I was, yeah, school. We started a school. It was this guy, this political party that who, at the, he wanted to unite all Black Mauritanians.
What was it called?
EFDA. The party don't even exist anymore. You know what happened to the party?
What happened
Everybody
to the party?
Ran. They dismantled the party.
Everyone ran or got arrested.
Yeah, they took the leaders, put them in jail, and whoever was involved with this one, they made new laws and saying that those guys are doing things that they're supposed to not be doing. They was chasing them one by one. That's how I ran from here. I come to America. And they told me that, your country have changed. The country condition now is good. Nothing will happen to you. But the guy was chasing you one way. Nothing gonna happen to you. Yeah, they're gonna give you some cake when you go home in the house. Just get out of here, go. And they sent me right back. I got arrested. Coming from jail, I came to my country and said again, welcome home. It's gonna be all right. They put a cuff on me again in my own land, you know. I was passed down by the police, American police, whoever, directly to the, not the police, just saying, go ahead, put them over there in jail to do whatever you want to do. We don't care. And that's how I feel.
Yeah. You've definitely spent a lot of time in jail for somebody who is not a criminal.
Yeah, I did. Years. I don't even want to tell people about this. It's like a shame. Like, I didn't, a civil immigration. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
For so long, I started losing my mind. One time I went to the nurse because I'd be having a nightmare, and she tried to give me medication. I'm like, no, that's the last thing you're going to do to me. Nope.
Why is that?
Because I feel like, because I know me, I came from a family where I don't believe in medications and stuff like that until I'm sick. When I'm sick, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm not crazy.
You mean mental health medication?
Yeah, I went to the mental health because I started to have nightmares in jail. And then I just wanted to talk to someone.
Yeah.
Because I've been incarcerated in this room for so long. And then somebody that I know that who gave me his last bag of coffee, they was happy to go home. As soon as they got home, they died from coronavirus.
Oh,
and I'm
God.
Like, damn, yeah. I was just talking to him not even 2 days ago. He was happy to go home.
Yeah.
And he did. And all that just...
I'm sorry.
Most time going through. Yeah.
Yeah, and you had coronavirus twice at Morrow
yes.
County, right?
Yes, I did.
How does how does your time in jail at Morrow County and Butler County back in Ohio stack up against your experiences in jail and dealing with police in Mauritania?
Oh my God. To be honest with you, I think I talked to someone who's from Guatemala and I told him the same thing. I said, look, I feel like I'm back home again. That's how they used to treat me. Especially the two jails that you just mentioned here, Butler County and Morrow County.
Yeah.
Morrow County was worse. Morrow County is a place they intentionally put us over there with some people who got neo-Nazi sign on their arm. They got tattoos of hit the Nazis.
Oh, dear.
They put us over there with people who came from prison. People from this town, all of them know each other. They don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
Like people, they're not hiding, they hate them. They're not hiding about it, they're proud about it, they don't care about what you think about it. They're not even, they open about it. They put me out there. When we have coronavirus, they took us from one room to another room and they locked the room. They said, somebody will bring you a meal, a cold meal, bologna sandwiches. And we then open a little window and throw you that bologna sandwich. And that's it. And then when people started complaining, thank you God, the court made them do something because of me and other guys. We told them everything. You know, the judge believed in us and he made some rules when they started
right.
changing things. And try to keep us now, bro. You know, little stuff, but into even that, the captain of the jail was very mad. He tried to create, instead of doing the right thing, he just come and wake you up in the morning. And so when you say something, he'd be like, you're going to the hole today. And then he just punish you and put you in the hole for days.
Is that solitary confinement?
Hmm?
Is the hole solitary confinement?
Yes.
Okay. So
just
for no reason, that was happening?
Yeah, because they pissed off because they said that we told on them. We didn't tell them, we just told the truth.
Yeah.
That's all we did. Okay. Told the truth.
Well, I don't want to take too much of your time making you relive dark memories of bad people, but a couple final questions. Where are you right now? I forgot
right
to ask.
Right now I'm right here. It's a place called Njago. It's a hub, a place that BP find oil and gas, and we work here. You know, this new project, I was deployed IA between Mauritania and Senegal. It's 40 miles deep on the ocean, on the east, on the ocean Atlantic. We live in a phone.
Okay, and I was also curious, you mentioned the village you grew up in. What was it called? You might need to text this to me because I probably won't be able to repeat it, but what was the name?
I just told you, but here I will.
Okay.
Njago.
Welcome.
I'm gonna send it to you. me myself, I had to go to paper because the way they spell it is different. I'm gonna make sure I spell it right for you. I will send you. I'm gonna send it to you as soon as I.
Thank you so much.
Sure, I will. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Oh yeah. Is it anything else you wanted to ask me?
There is one more thing. Yeah.
Sure.
So just on a lighter note. What moment or moments have brought you the most joy since, you've left Ohio? I know that at the beginning especially, it was very, very difficult, but after 2 years in jail, what was the most joyful moment you've had just being free again?
Being free again? Oh my gosh. It's when my daughter and my wife came to visit me.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. That was just the best time ever. Yeah, that was it. Man, that's the best time I didn't have for so long. Because when I never got out of jail. I just went from a jail to another. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it. You know. But when my wife and my daughter came to see me, that was it. And yeah. Then I showed my ID at the border, and they processed it, and they let me pass. And I'm like, okay. It's cool now.
Yeah.
Wow. It was something. Yeah. That's the best time out there.
All right. Well, that's what I want to leave you with. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me, because I know how busy you've been lately.
Anytime you need to know anything about something.